Hey, good morning. It's good to be here. I haven't been a super regular. I've been on the podcast, but I haven't been a super regular lately, so it's really nice. It's actually a treat to come. My name's Tamsin. Some new faces that I've just met, or we've met once before, last time I was here. So this morning, I think the guys have already said pretty much everything. I don't really have to share anything. Hope. No pressure, Rod. I have to bring a message of hope to our community for us to go away inspired. And, yeah, no, appreciate that setup. I've been to some talks where the intro sort of is so grandiose, you know, it's so epic. And you sort of have this great letdown of, oh, yeah, that was almost the peak. That was... So let's lower our expectations for this morning and just, yeah, we'll eat of the bread that is delivered. That's prophetic of me. This image is, we are in the middle of a series about memory, if you have just been tapping in, which I think is a lovely thing. I've sort of been surprised how much I've enjoyed that, because we've had a lot of phenomenal teaching. We've had a lot of interesting ideas presented to establish kind of who we are. And if you're anything like me, hearing something once often isn't enough. I need to brew on something and soak in something and wrestle with it for it to be a message that's kind of in my belly. So touching base on some of the things that we've spoken about is kind of, for me, that grounding process of, oh, these messages are not just ideas. They're actually truths that I hold really dear. And I love that there's a community gathered around them. This picture has been up, but you've all sort of, I don't know, did everyone here think that was, they were just gathered around a box of people would put paper in, like, of community ideas? Is that what you took? Because it's a computer, you know that, right? I know, right? So this is one of the, from Berkeley in California, this is in a record shop. It's actually a computer, and in the hippie style, they've kind of wrapped it in a box by the look of it. But the computer was one of the first computers where the bulletin board behind was being moved into a computer version. So you would put in a message and people could look at the computer to see the messages of the community to reflect that. Kind of, I guess, the comment was, it was before we sort of were suspicious of the internet, or the internet was just sort of government. It was like the hippies get hold of embodying computers to do their community work. So, yeah, that's changed my view of the picture. Anyway, that's just a side note from as we go. But, yeah, it was that I like the idea that we're kind of starting to imprint and identify and re-articulate some of our ideas from this community. I don't know about you. My encounters with Christian faith communities have been such a broad and interesting little story. We didn't grow up going to church. I think I've shared that before. We lived near a church that my parents would sometimes attend, but I don't think they really liked it, so we didn't go very often. And I remember going, and there was a certain set church culture. It was quite a small, sort of formal Anglican church, and there was this church culture that as a kid was like boring. And really, I struggled to understand what I had to do to be in that culture. And I felt like my family really didn't fit. We were much messier than the church appeared. It very sort of seemed like you adopt a certain way of being in a church community. And soon enough, you'll discover what that way of being. The church teaches you the culture you need to adopt to be there. And this culture was not particularly deep. It was quite formal. You kind of baked cakes for each other. That sort of, it was nice. It was a really kind, nice place to come and praise, have cups of tea, have Arnott's, you know, milk biscuits, and then you go home. And even as a kid, I remember thinking, oh, it's just so different from my family. And my mum kind of, she just said, oh, there's not many interesting people there. So I think that she also felt messier and that she couldn't quite wiggle into the form of that church to make it work for her. And we just picked that up. We're not going to sort of wriggle into that form of Christian to be there, because we're just a little bit more feral, maybe, than that gave us permission to be. But in high school, I had this passionate, charismatic Pentecostal friend who raved, and she was so alluring. Her faith that she presented was like peak, you know. You get to know God and you encounter Awesome! God is so awesome. You've been in sort of some passionate youth ministries. That's exciting. That sort of vibe is cool. Like, as I really was really drawn to that excitement of that culture and found myself in a new Christian community that maybe was a bit more complete. There was a lot of messy people there, but the dominant culture was pretty up, pretty crazy. If you've ever been to a Hillsong conference, kind of praising and just peaking, I guess, in this positive culture, there was a lot of that, which I was really drawn to. The problem was I didn't quite fit. There's a lot, I picture that, again, the longer you're in a community, you discover what's the permissible cultural traits that you have to adopt to be there. What's kind of the top of the iceberg that you have to adopt to be in a community? And every community is a little bit different. And I was a pretty messy, had a lot of mental health problems, and a lot of that was not really in that permissible spot. It was kind of a bit more messier and down below. My doubt over some of the how up everything was, you couldn't really voice it because there wasn't a lot of room for that. We really, worship had to be peak experience for it to mean something. And at that point, a few things, you either just keep your pessimism or your ideas or your depression, or you could keep it to yourself, or you just remove yourself from the community. They're kind of the two options that you're given, really. If you can't integrate a complete full experience of life in that space, you either segregate who you are to fit the culture, or you withdraw from the culture, which is maybe sort of what I had done a bit at that point. Let me just jump through my little notes today. This morning in worship, you might have experienced, we all sort of wrestle with peak songs. I don't know if as soon as an upbeat song comes on, you wake up, or part of you is like, oh, here we go. Like, I really get us back to that sort of that down encounter. What was I? Yeah, I think the moment I have enjoyed the best, maybe in this culture, is that there doesn't seem to be a particular prescriptive. Every culture will have a dominant culture. That's just how communities work. But I've enjoyed the messiness. As soon as someone gives me a bit of mess, I'm a bit like, oh, okay, that's, or even faith, you know, that, I don't know about you, to be honest, for me, I'm often really disappointed in faith. Oh, God is not enough, or formed enough, or clear enough. And I have a lot more time in disbelief than I do in clear belief. That's my honest faith story. I've really struggled to read the Bible and don't really enjoy it. Often when I do, I don't find it a life-giving text to ponder in the morning. Sometimes I have, and sometimes it's not part of my lexicon of life-giving. I'd rather listen to an on-being podcast, and that gives me some interesting ideas, give me life-giving ideas, but scripture, there's too much I have to do to make it work or to make it mean something. I have a little clip for us to look at. React to it as you will. But yeah, I think it just kind of ponder, and then we'll have a bit of a chance just to share a bit with each other of maybe some of those peak experience. What are the permissible cultural moments that you've had, and have you been able to adopt it? Do you have your own little life inside that while you're singing, you're kind of, I used to draw dinosaurs a lot while, I don't know, during worship, just because I was kind of distracted and not really feeling it. So there's often the many things going on in a church community. So we'll just watch this, and just see where you fit with it.
I will sing of your love on Sundays. Only sing of your love on Sundays. I will sing of your love on Sundays. Then this feeling is gone by Monday.
I surrender some. I surrender some. Jesus, I will give you little. My hairdo, my stylist outdid her. It's now a standard here. But I still sing it, though I don't mean it. And I just go through the motions.
Hallelujah.
Lift up your hands.
It's funny, I think that I'm pretty sure they're using it as a tool how to worship better, like don't worship like this. But I personally love raw honesty. I love it. I'd rather someone sings like a bit like that because it's truer than it is than faking it. It's funny, you might have find even yourself just going, oh, there's something sort of sacred in the songs that I get a bit uncomfortable when someone is in parody, there's something, you know. One option when sort of finding that dissonance in a Christian faith community where it doesn't quite reflect, or you feel it sings a single song but not many songs, or it edifies a certain person and not all people, is cynicism or just disappointment. That's not just option B, but that's something that we all maybe feel. It's when someone gives you a platitude, you know, when you just, oh, I'm not doing so well. I'm like, oh, let's pray about it because Jesus is the answer. And you just go, like, just that reacting of like, I don't need your good Christian message if it's not real and true. So it happens even in life, I guess, if people are too, Facebook's a funny thing. I've been off for so long. And so coming back on, it's a weird and wonderful place. You've probably got Christian friends who post Christian messages with Christian frames around the edge of just hope in the Lord. And I react. I react to all things. But I also react with when there's a pessimistic, you know, stuff everything, stuff the church. I react quite strongly to that as well. I sort of don't even know where to fit anymore because I just find I'm unable to sit in either camp if there's two Christian camps to sit in of kind of there's something precious in faith communities and I want to honour it, but there's got to be a truth behind it and a full-bodied robustness to it that can handle this world. And this world is a crazy place, as we're saying, and even this week of just despair has taken a few more lives this week. And that's really like despair for when it comes to global warming or I get about the great patch of plastic, you know, there's two great patches. I sometimes don't even know how to embrace these. I don't even, like the switch off button, I don't know if any of you have an escape that you have on your phone of looking at pictures of cats or something. Sometimes that's the third way. I can't really handle how messed up this planet or the health of the planet is anymore. So I'll look at funny cats for a bit longer, or I'll just get angry and shout through Facebook at everyone. It's really hard to find the balance of hope in that place. And we each have a natural, dare I say, we each have a natural song. And that means that you'll react in every Christian community you're in. For a while, I think I'm a bit more of an upbeat, despite what I come across, a bit more of an upbeat person. I really love Christian, like when those kind of peak Christian moments, I really have loved them. And I love looking for hope and I love looking for messages that get us through. I naturally sort of fit in that place and get really exhausted by cynicism or just negative messages that really, but not everyone's like that. You know, people can sit with a whole lot more cynicism, and that not be evil or anything. Richard Beck, we talk about Richard Beck here a lot, wonderful thinker and writer. He helps just kind of flesh out this big spectrum of Christian experience and where we each sit on that. And I might go through, might just jump in. Before I get to that, I'm just going to read a quote from the lovely Walter Brueggemann, just kind of identifying, he explores why is the church so funny when it comes to just positives sometimes and not negatives. So he says, it is a curious fact that the church has, by and large, continued to sing songs of orientation in a world increasingly experienced as disorientated. It is my judgment that this action of the church is less evangelical defiance guided by faith and much more a frightened, numb denial and deception that does not want to explore the disorientation of life. He goes on to say, the reason for such relentless affirmation of orientation seems to me not from faith, but from the wishful optimism of our culture. Such a denial and cover-up, which I take it to be, is an odd inclination for passionate Bible users, given the large number of psalms that are songs of lament, protest, and complaint about the incoherence that is experienced in the world. I believe that the serious religious use of lament psalms has been minimal because we have believed that faith does not mean to acknowledge and embrace negativity. What we might do just quickly before I jump into some Richard Beck stuff, maybe just at your tables, share just a quick thought. What's been your experience of maybe Christian optimism or kind of peak experience or communities that have a certain culture that is required of everyone, whether it be optimistic or even a cult? What's your experience of Christian pessimism or cynicism and a culture that embraces that? So what's your experience of maybe the polar extremes of Christian community, cynicism or optimism? Have a chat. How you going? Do you need a minute more? 1 minute more. Got it. All right, if you want to bring the whatever you just come to, sorry to stop you talking, it's a good conversation. Any interesting things or things that have come up that you want to quickly share with the greater group that...
Thanks, Tamsin, what you said. I really identified that. In the discussion I had with Taylor, I find being uncomfortable with mess. I come from a background where when you just said, you're at your peak when you're in that very high moment, and I've been used to that. And I think coming to the church community here over a year ago, I've learnt that, you know, being with mess, it is uncomfortable, but it's fine now. But I still struggle with that because I subconsciously in my system, I feel like, you know, if you're in a messy state, can you just come back next Sunday when you're vibrant again? Because I don't want to see it. But, you know, I'm learning very slowly, but, you know, just learning.
I appreciate you. Honest, that's powerfully said.
We had great discussions at this table. I think part of it too is I think the culture that I've come from too, it's like you have the message of hope, you have the message of love, you have the message, all these things that everything you need is there. And then it's like, yeah, but I still feel like this, you know? So I think that's the cognitive dissonance piece for me. It's like, okay, well, you feel this pressure of what you should and all these normative values of what you should. But it's like, okay, well, yeah, but, right? So I think that's kind of difficult as well.
Thank you. I heard the term happy, shiny people. And I definitely went to a church once that had just a bajillion happy, shiny people who seemed to have no problems. And my family and my experience of life was mess, and that was not coped with. And I couldn't marry up that understanding of the Christian faith with the Jesus who interacted with mess on a daily, like, daily.
I just add to the happy, shiny people thing, the actual last church that I used to go to actually played a song by REM called Happy, Shiny People.
I think in my context, messiness was allowed, but it was like very defined of where it was allowed. I don't know if anyone, especially like in my really evangelical days, we were sort of taught to put all of our stories into this Jenny Craig diet formula, where it was like sort of like the before Jenny Craig / Jesus, the during Jenny Craig / Jesus transformation, and your post Jenny Craig / Jesus transformation. They literally use the words Jenny Craig and we had like boxes to fill in, and we were taught to put like our testimony into that story. So I can put so many stories into 3-minute Jenny Craig versions. I think I still have files of them on my computer. But one Sunday I'll regale you all with how Jesus changed my life and I lost weight. But that aside, that sort of it created space for the messiness, but it was only like if you had this happy transformational ending. You were never allowed to finish the story with, and it was shit, or it was messy. It always had to have that sort of perfect, full, transformational ending, but Jesus redeemed it, because all of our stories had to be for evangelistic purposes, and leaving it messy at the end did not fit with this, we're selling Jesus, we're selling this Jesus diet to you. Right, so I think sort of the messiness was allowed, but only within that sort of specific, defined, there's hope at the end.
I remember having to the same thing about we had to write our testimony out, and I remember giving it because it was completed by then. I was ready to give it out. It was a finished story, but still going home and struggling, you know, with the same thing and that dissonance, as we said, for Taylor was saying before, just that dissonance of, oh, this is it. If I was brutally honest, it would leave everyone uncomfortable because it wouldn't have Jesus really restored me back to everything. Like it would leave everyone, and probably they would ask me not to share. because I was obviously still in it. You know, it would have disqualified me from sharing testimony at that point.
I like the idea of having meal-sized, low-fat portions of Jesus in the freezer.
Yeah, go for it. This is the last one.
Well, I was just thinking and said to my table about the experience of being a performer and having to perform perform in that way, and how easy it is to turn that inauthentic switch on, especially when you've grown up with everyone doing that same thing, and how hard it is to actually be your authentic self up on stage, because that can be like. Firstly, because partly you're performing a service. So if you're like, I've played with depression many times and not shared that actually all I wanted to do was go home and curl up in bed and not ever leave the house. And how that dissonance of like your actual experience versus having to go stand up the front and say, encouraging, inspiring things to a room full of people, and then actually give energy to people from your own reduced stores, and how one of the ways to do that is to like put on that fake that persona.
Thank you, everyone. It's you guys have got a lot of wisdom here. I'm just going to shove. We've got, just ignore that for a second, Richard Beck, he sort of identifies the, in all of this whole conversation, we've all got our personalities, we've all got a mix of our sort of settled selves and our particular sort of nuance, and he would frame it as summer Christian or winter Christian, and the church traditionally saying, well, a winter Christian, which might be someone who's more comfortable with lament, with grief, with mess, with just the grey, maybe that sort of, if you think through the scriptures of like lamentations, or some people sit in that easier than others, and that would traditionally be sort of a polar. If you're on that half in the sort of darker place, you really aren't as holy as if you're a summer, a bright and upbeat, a testimony type of Christian, and that the church has room for this half of that sort of spectrum only. And he likes to acknowledge the difference in personality, that some of us are more comfortable in lament, and some of us genuinely crave some hope. We crave upbeat, like there's something in us, as I said, like that just craves sometimes a false sense of up, but sometimes I'm like, oh, my natural kind of gift is a gift of like that hopeful our personality, you know, that's kind of that I feel comfortable in and can sit in much easier than just a darker space. And everyone is, and they're okay. They're not right or wrong, and they're actually both a gift to the church, because our work that we are to do, if we're looking at a church culture, the work we are to do is to be in both spaces. Richard Beck, and he would sort of say, yeah, the goal is not moving one way or the other. The goal is for all of us to move towards communion, not only with God, but with one another and with the planet around us. That is our goal. With the view that we see best and clearest, we are to bring that. And it's not all dark, because some of us will need to have another view of building and something. So it's kind of the journey is up rather than down, and not sort of left to right, as he would articulate it. One thing I loved what he said about sort of following that idea, he said, we all have a natural poetry. Talking in regard to songs of lament or hope, or some of these songs we find easier to sing than others. The prophets among us are wonderful at the poetry of rage and rebuke. Winter Christians like myself are good at grief. We're more sad than angry. And finally, there are summer Christians who are good at seeing hope where others can't see anything. I emphasise that you embrace your natural poetry. Sing the song you were born to sing. While you should embrace your natural song, you need to welcome and be skilled at singing all the songs. If only songs of hope, if you only sing songs of hope, your faith will become trivial and superficial, disconnected from injustice and the suffering of the world. If you only sing songs of anger or sorrow, you'll burn yourself out or fail to offer encouragement to those who may need to hear it. Yeah, we all have a natural song. Embrace it. Sing it out loud. Learn to sing the songs, but we also need to learn to sing all the songs if our faith is to be vibrant and a blessing to others. Immature Christians tend to only sing one song ever. Anger over and over, lament over and over, praise over and over. Mature Christians, by contrast, are always the best poets, skilled at singing all the songs and adapting the rhyme and meter of faith to the season and situation. I sort of love hearing that of the church that's right is not the church that's A or B, or it's the church that can be true to its song. Each of us can be true to our nature and our personality. That's not something that needs to be adapted. But it's learning to recognise if you're just singing hope at, like, a worship leader who comes to sing at you, come on, guys, let's come up, let's praise the Lord, and no one's with you. You've not done your job as ministering out of hope, because the hope hasn't connected to anyone. This book by Walter Brueggemann, which I've been sort of wrestling with, it's a wonderful, I'd recommend you. He talks about the great prophetic work of us, the church now, is the work of sitting in reality, the work of grief, and the work of hope. That these are some of the things that we are called to do. So if we're to define our church culture, it's not an up culture or a down culture, which we can slip into, and maybe we have at times in our church history, or some of the memories of reacting against rather than building up, and some of them all okay. But the work of the ministry of reality, let's be courageous enough to see the world around us. Let's together find ways of looking at some of the tragic things that are happening on our planet, because they're really hard to grapple with on one's own. We need to grapple with that together a little bit more, because it's really hard. And those who are skilled at seeing what is and some of the issues in our neighbourhood, in ourselves, let's listen to their voice, their song. Let's give them space and room to breathe. Let's grieve as a church. Some of us will grieve and create spaces of lament. That's our gift to the church. And some of us will sit uncomfortably as we lament things. That's not our natural space. But let's listen to the song of those in our church who can grieve well and give us opportunity to grieve, because, gosh, we've got a lot to grieve about in our stories, in our world. And if we don't grieve, it just gets dysfunctional, I'm sure. Maybe Jackie would say, like, if you don't allow pain time, it leaks out in strange ways if you don't give it room to have its time. But it's not the only song, you know, that's not the only song we sing of lament. The most challenging task, I think, of the church is to hold on to faith, or hold on to hope, sorry. Hope is a tricky thing. We've all got, obviously you've come today, there's a hope that brings you here, that there's something still in the gathering, we're still hopeful. I'm still hopeful that I can learn about the stories found in Scripture and find people looking to the same God that I'm looking to, so I'm still hopeful about that. But it has to be creative. If we want to be a hopeful people, it can't just be someone telling you to be hopeful. There's nothing that puts me, I'm like, well, I just won't be hopeful then if you're going to tell me. Like, we have to be creative. That's why, Rod, I love your song. I love your, you know, that you've thought about kind of a message that needs to be sung by our community. And it's true. It's a true from our belly to our words. And that if we can sing more songs that are true from our belly rather than someone kind of, we just praise, oh, you know, like the ups, or we go, oh, what are our true stories? What are our true stories of grief, of confusion, of joy, of gorgeous Evie and Stuart? Come, like, what are our songs that as a community help bring us to life? Because we want to have hope in this space. Like, I feel like it's a string for me, but I've had enough encounters of something divine that keeps me coming and keeps me hoping to see beyond what we see. Because there's something beyond what we see, that this world is not just what we see, not in the sense of one day we get to go to heaven, but in a sense that we've tasted of something and it's kept us coming back. So, yeah, I hope that, I guess, in wrapping up, I think it was a between Rob, it was last year, we talked a bit about hope-infused realism, that as a community we're not just naive optimists and we're not just pessimists and sort of cynical about the church and the world we're in, but we're able to handle reality and we haven't lost the hope that's in our bellies that we've got from our tradition, we've got from the scriptures, this hope. So that's our challenge, I think, is to find how our community sits with this hopeful realism, and how we can be hopeful and cultivate hope. Any thoughts on, as part of our church story, that this being something we hope to have, to be a community known for being real and blunt, but not having lost some of something that our tradition has given us? And
yeah, I just really love that a lot, because I think often we feel like we're given two choices of either you believe or you don't believe, and you're not, yeah, you feel like a traitor either way. I think that's really nice, like it's a nice sort of framework and concept to have when you're challenged with someone that's sort of saying you're either in or you're out, that there is a third way of, yeah, being able to tolerate and acknowledge pain, and that there are no formulas that always work out, but that there's space for hope and grace and even, you know, unexpected good things to turn around. There is that, but you can hold on to both at the same time. So.
Well, the first thing I want to say is thank you. That was so wonderful. A couple of other things that occurred to me is I went to a course with this guy that talked about prosthetic roles, that we have ways of connecting with others that are where life flows, and then there are things that are prosthetic where there's no life, and that's inevitable in life, that there are times when you don't feel safe, and so you're connecting through a stick that you reach out. So we shouldn't feel a sense of shame when that happens, but it's something that we need to constantly monitor and go, in my role in this community, in the way I'm engaging with people, is that connected to the life in me or not? So that's why I found that so wonderfully helpful to reflect on that. Yeah.
Yeah, the thought, like this week I was just like, oh, you sort of hope not to have just a happy gathering or a happy, but we'd hope to have an honest gathering. I think that's the authenticity is the greatest task that we can, to come authentic, but not afraid of either the grief or the joy and hoping for something beyond. You know, it's that authentic space.